Hello everyone. Today we'll talk about distributed storage options in the cloud. And I have lots of slides to get through, so I better get started. This presentation is going to be a high level overview, so do not expect deep details here. As an outcome, I hope you will learn about the options and, well, you know what, we all can use Google to find more details about. And I'm by far not expert in all of those technologies covered, so I would expect I made a mistake or two here. So let's talk about first on a high level, the storage types we have, have to deal with as we're building our applications. Those range from node local storage, which are connected to a device, all the way to their databases, ranging from something which is relatively simple to something which can be quite complicated. And oh my gosh, databases can be really complicated. If you look at a database space, the database space alone may be really sliced and diced in very many different ways. For example, we often talk about databases based on the data model they use, such as relational or SQL databases, or no SQL databases, which is actually a very important concept, which will make you to choose one database or another, depending on the storage type you need for your application. What is also interesting about the databases, some of the databases can be what is called multimodal databases. That means what a single database may support multiple data models or even talk different languages or protocol. Some databases can be seen as truly shape changers, if you like. For example, ClickHouse, rather popular analytical column store, in addition to its native ClickHouse protocol, can also talk Postgres and MySQL protocol. Victoria Metrics, supporting FluxDB and Graphit API, the new project which I am frankly involved in called FerretDB, helps you to use PostgreSQL with MongoDB API. And Babelfish, which AWS released recently, allows you to use Postgres as if it were Microsoft SQL Server. So you can see there is a lot of choices and a lot of complexities in a database space. And for better or worse, it's getting much more powerful and more complicated every day. If you look at the databases from their purpose and design standpoint, we also have quite a difference here. One split is operational, or we also call them transactional versus analytical databases, which require a lot of very different design consideration and often deployment types. Some databases may be used for cache or for actually a primary persistent database. We have databases which are optimized as in-memory versus really storage-based, and so on and so forth. As a new development, we even have a blockchain database coming up, which are using the blockchain to store the data instead of traditional technologies. So in our presentation, we are talking about distributed storage. Why distributed, and why is it particularly important in the cloud? Well, the first, of course, is redundancy, performance, and scale. That is something which you just cannot have with a storage which is not distributed. And I think especially so in the cloud, when this approach where I have certain, you know, device which I really scale up and I really pray it will never go down in the next 5 years, is just not something we can do, right? If you think about the cloud, it doesn't really work well with that pet model. We really need to treat our devices as cattle, and that requires us to have their distributed solutions which can survive in such environment, and which really can survive if some node disappears, possibly without a trace. Another thing I think which is good to touch on here briefly is their open source. I think if you look at the storage options in particular, there can be a lot of confusion around the open source those days. You can have a lot of vendors talking about what their license is almost as good as open source, right? You hear things as open core, all the way to something called open source compatible software, which is not open source, but being kind of sold to you as something which provides most of the benefits of open source software. This is why I like to highlight how I think about open source software, not from a so much philosophical, but from a practical standpoint. This is a thing what I, as a CEO, may need to employ to describe somebody in the management in a large company, right? And I focus on those three things. First is, can you really deploy the solution in your own environment without incurring additional costs? Basically, if you cannot run it on your Raspberry Pi or laptop free of charge, it is not really giving you value for open source software. Second is, do you have a choice of vendors if you need help? Right. I think on this conference, there is a lot of very capable engineers. But if you look at the open source in a business, often companies want to hire somebody as a staff member or as a consultant to help them. And if you are left with only one vendor who can do that, you have lock-in, which is not a good thing. And that is not really what open source is about. And third is, can you improve the software you're dealing with? If you cannot improve software, contribute to the project to make it to solve your needs, if you're prevented from doing that, then that is, again, not really gives you a lot of value in an open source project. The next thing to cover here is the cloud. What kind of cloud we are going to talk about? I am going to look at two kinds of solutions, really. One, solutions which come specifically from the cloud vendors, and others which are coming from a Kubernetes or cloud native ecosystem. And I think this is the second set of solution is very powerful, and that is growing a lot because Kubernetes has become ubiquitous in a modern day and age, and it is really available on pretty much any major public cloud provider, as well as easy to deploy in a lot of data centers or on-prem or on the edge situation. Okay, with that, with a little overview, let us look at specific storage options and see what kind of choices do we have out there. The first kind of storage I will refer as a commodity storage. Commodity storage is rather simple storage, which is very good to be used as a building block. And even if it itself is not open source, it doesn't really create a lot of vendor lock-in because it has a so simple and unified API. What would be example? The first is your node local storage. Well, basically, if you're spinning up a node on Amazon or in your data center, it will have a local disk, which pretty much looks the same. And you don't really need to do a lot of special things to support that kind of storage. And that allows you to move between different implementations a lot, at least functionality-wise. Performance, though, can vary a lot. And different cloud vendors can give you very different performance option in this case. If you look at specifically what is the fastest is NVMe-based directly attached flash storage tends to be the fastest, both in terms of throughput and especially in terms of latency. The second common building block is your network blocks block storage. EBS, Azure Managed Disk, GCP Persistent Disk. Again, that is just a disk, but well, it happened to be network attached. And what is interesting in this case is that there are some proprietary vendors which also provides you the network block storage with some added benefits or features or what you can consider. But what is the most exciting for me is that there are also a number of open source block storage options which are available if you do not want to use cloud implementation or if you just need to build something from scratch in your own data center. The next type of those commodity storage would be your file system. Again, all cloud vendors provide something in this regard, and we can see the pretty much the same vendors provide the file storage interface in a commercial space. And that is really not a surprise, because if you really build that kind of thing which can operate the distributed storage, it makes sense that you have a block, file, and object interfaces for that. And that is why you also can see there is a lot of overlap for file storage with the open source options as well. The next commodity storage is the object store, right? We often even refer to that as S3 compatible storage, right? And this is a very powerful, very convenient type of storage which all large cloud provides. But what is also interesting here is what you both have the proprietary vendors which allow you to get this kind of storage on-prem, as well as alternative vendors which provide you the storage, often significantly less expensive, in the cloud. Wasabi, BlackBlaze, DigitalOcean are example of the companies which provide S3 compatible API, often at lower prices, which can be wonderful. For example, if you're looking for some less expensive things to back something else. But again, in an open source space, you also have multiple choices. Minio, I think, is by far the most commonly known S3 compatible storage, but I think it is wonderful that there is some competition and there are other choices in the open source space. Now let's look at the various databases and data stores. Now, these are not commodity, they are much more differentiated. And what that means, even if you're speaking about similar offerings like, relational database here and there, they are likely to be rather different. And if that is where I would focus on using open source technologies if you want to avoid lock-in. So what kind of data stores and databases we have, or what is it type on? The first one, what I would mention, is queues, streams, data pipes. This is kind of not really the database itself, but something what you are using to move the data around between the data stores, right? This is kind of a database plumbing, which is a very important element of the major data infrastructures, or modern data infrastructures. You can see in this case, there is a lot of options from a different data stores. The Amazon AWS, who went earliest in this thing before really Kafka emerged as an open source leader, they have a lot of options, right? Others have slightly less. We also have the proprietary solutions, such from various vendors, managed Kafka from AVN, Confluent, which is a main vendor with our Kafka project, or in Instacluster. I call it proprietary, even though some of them, such as Instacluster, run open source version of Kafka, because the whole solution of all the management, API, backups, monitoring, all that thing which is required for you to run the Kafka successfully is not open source. Remember the practical open source definition I have. Well, if I have my own set of boxes, can I really get that full experience on my own. Well, not with Avian and Instacluster, you can only get their core of Kafka out there. If you look at the open source in particular, there are quite a few choices here too. With this, I would focus in particular on Apache Kafka, which is, I think, the most successful, most dominating technology out there, which is becoming really as a standard of moving that data around. Okay, let's move on to the databases. In the databases, the most important kind of database available in the cloud are relational databases. These are some of the oldest databases, and you can even call them like a boring databases. But if you look at amount of data and amount of workloads in the world, majority of them are still powered by those relational databases, open source and not. If you look at the major cloud vendors, all of them those days have a selection of database as a service solutions, both for proprietary and for open source databases, as you can see that. And then there is a lot of relational databases solutions from a third party vendors as well. Obviously, Oracle, Microsoft have their own version, right? Instacluster and Avian, which have Kafka, also have managed relational databases. What I think worth noting here is also those newcomers, Yugabyte and CockroachDB, which have the managed version of PostgreSQL compatible database, but which is also distributed, which is quite cool, innovative solution. If you look at open source, well, there is a lot of choices here. Of course, we're thinking about MySQL, Postgres, MariaDB, those are open source. Yugabyte and TidyDB, these are also vendors which provide you the open source distributed databases if you want to run it yourself as a kind of complement to the cloud offering. And we ourselves as Percona provide our own build. We call it Percona distribution for MySQL and Postgres as well, which, well, I just can just have to mention. If you look at the relational analytical databases, there are also choices here, and these are different choices. As I mentioned in the start of this presentation, the transactional and analytical relational databases, they have to be built for very different purpose, right? And with that, they become very different technologies. And also we have a lot of proprietary analytical databases too, as you can see. If you're looking at relational databases in the open source space, you can check out some of those options. Some of those you can see the same, but there are also some are specifically different. I would highlight here solutions as MariaDB Column Store, which is interesting because that is Column Store, which has a full power and compatibility with MariaDB SQL dialect. It's not the most high performant column store, but it is out there. Another technology to mention is ClickHouse, which has its own particular SQL dialect, right, with some additional SQL features, but it is really, really, really fast. Let's move to the document store. In the document store, we also have different options from pretty much all their cloud providers. And if you think about the proprietary space, it is interesting here because document store as a as a kind of core part of NoSQL databases, it kind of came to existence when it had this wave of open source / open core or source available databases, right? So we all have vendors here, MongoDB and Couchbase, which are kind of, well, at least have been open source, right, at some point. If you are looking at document store databases, well, you have a MongoDB community or a Couchbase community as a common choices. MongoDB is source available. It's not open source. Couchbase is. And also, I would mention what you can use relational databases in many cases to store documents. In fact, both MySQL and Postgres leading open source databases have significantly improved their ability to store documents recently. If you look at the key value stores, it is interesting to look to them from two different purposes. One is for caching and another for actually your persistent store. If you look for caching, there are those choices. Redis is, I would think, as a dominating, as is a proprietary store with their enterprise cloud editions. And if you're looking at open source, you probably would be looking for Redis and Memcached as a choices. Where Memcached was popular a decade ago, but since that, I think Redis has a lot of dominance. If you have a persistent key value store, or kind of, I would call it like extended key value store, there are different options in the cloud, like DynamoDB or Google Big Table. But if you look at persistent in a proprietary space, you can look back to the Redis cloud again, because it has both persistent and not persistent options within a system, single system. In terms of key value store, though, in the open source space, there is a lot of choices, right? I mean, that is really very broad market. Well, and frankly, to be fair, many of those open source variants, they also have a proprietary version. I just wasn't interested in that. What is particularly interesting, in my opinion, is what you can also use relational databases as key value store. And you can think indeed about relational databases, especially modern one, as this is a very powerful Swiss Army knife, which can be used for a lot of purposes, right? Especially for light duty, right? I mean, if you are looking for key value store of, 10 trillion key value pairs, relational database probably is not the best choice for that. But if you just need a little bit of a key value stores, maybe you don't need to pull another data store in your application, and the relational database would just do fine. Another interesting data store to focus on is time series. The time series is different because in a modern world with the Internet of Things, with so many devices constantly generating a lot of data, over time, we have a lot of time series store, time series data everywhere, and we need a lot of way to store that. And there are solutions which exist for those from proprietary cloud, as well as proprietary versions of variety of the products. I think because time series is the most one of the newer approach for databases, we didn't have a lot of consolidation here yet. We don't really quite know who are the winners and losers, so there are a lot of open source options right now. I will just mention a couple of here. I think the Prometheus is very interesting as a purpose-built database for monitoring, especially it is a very powerful in Kubernetes ecosystem, right? It's kind of the standard. TimescaleDB has another interesting property. This is essentially a plugin for Postgres, which allows you to use full power of PostgreSQL SQL language plus more while having a very efficient data store. And Victoria Matrix, which I mentioned already, I think is interesting technology because it on one side has a Prometheus compatible, at least on a high level, similar to Prometheus language, but at the same time, it is also can be massively parallel scalable, and it also has compatibility with other data stores such as Graffiti and InfluxDB, which is I think is pretty cool. Okay, with that, let me finish up maybe saying a few words about what Percona has to do with all of this, right? And why am I talking about this at all? If you think about Percona, we see our role as really pushing the boundaries of open source databases, while really sticking specifically to open source, don't play in any kind of open core games or whatever, right? And specifically cloud and Kubernetes ecosystem is a big focus for us because we think that is a great opportunity to make a difference for their future. We are focused at this point of MySQL, MongoDB, and Postgres. Though over time, I think we'll be able to cover more open source databases and data stores. That is why I am kind of constantly looking at that environment to understand what is going on. If you think about what Percona provides from a software standpoint in an open source ecosystem, we provide their distributions of those open source database software, which are typically enhanced version of the upstream, and they're 100% open source. And we're focusing both on the Linux deployment, as well as we have operators for all of those technologies, which allow you to conveniently deploy that in a Kubernetes environment. Additionally, we have a software which is called Percona Monitoring and Management, which is your basically single pane of glass for MySQL, MongoDB, and Postgres databases. We start with this as an observability platform, but we have been recently adding management features as well as database as a server experience, right? Where you basically can provide and manage databases with GUI or API, which I think which is quite cool, and we believe what that was really missing in open source ecosystem. With that, to finish it up, I covered a lot of ground here, and you can see what the storage options in the cloud are quite complicated. The most important takeaways I would like you to take from it is that there is no really one size fits all. Right, a lot of applications have a different needs, and there is a lot of options available out there. The important thing, though, you, as I walk through my slides, you could see there is number of very good, feasible, open source options available for everything. So if your passion is for open source, you can really choose the open source solution, wherever your storage needs are. With that, it's all I had, and thank you.